This episode of the Cutting Edge Podcast is brought to you by GlassGadget.com. Showcase Innovations creates tools that help shower door installers be more efficient and save time. Check out GlassGadget.com for more information. Shower door people are the best people that I know. Of course, they're probably pretty much the only people I know. Because it's like I work too much. But I love it. Shower doors are awesome. Man, they're just, they just get better and better over the years. Hey, thanks for joining us. It's always good to see y'all. I want to say guys, but we got gals too, you know, because like we're an inclusive group. And, you know, and I love that we have ladies in this group. I think it's awesome. It kind of keeps us on our best behavior, you know, and you know, women just kind of bring civility, you know, to any group that you have. So more of those would be great. You know, tell all of your friends, tell all of your lady friends and the shower door biz to come on over that we're very polite and we're very nice. And it's a safe place to come hang out and chat about shower doors, shower door business, shower door techniques, all that great stuff. You know, and along those lines, we are really blessed, I have to say, to have our very own Bill Dobman. I mean, can you imagine this guy comes and hangs out with us like just about every week? I mean, unless he's got something else going on, this guy is like always here, a real source of support and mentoring and just an all-around great guy. And just, you know, you'll never meet a more down-to-earth, humble guy. Him and his whole family are like that, but you guys know that already. Anyway, so tonight's topic is just going to be all about tricks for maximum efficiency, and who knows more about that than the Dobmans? These guys are killing it out there, and so I asked Bill if he would be willing to come on, chat a little bit about some of his processes and systems. I've seen just a glimpse of this. I haven't had the tour yet, but one of these days soon, I'm going to get down to Florida and check it all out. But we're going to get a little preview of that this evening. So without any more of me flapping my gums, I'm just going to go ahead and turn it on over to Bill. Bill, it's all yours. Take it away.
You bet. Hey, thanks, Chris. You know, when you asked me to do something on the stream tonight, I thought efficiency would be good because it can go in so many different ways. And what does it mean to be efficient? How do you calculate your efficiency? How do you know you're being most efficient? And that could go anywhere from installation to scheduling to sales, I mean, all the way down the road. So I had a bunch of topics, but before we talk about it, the first thing I want to say is, most of what I've learned is because of mistakes, because I didn't have somebody mentoring me. So I'm not doing this to blow my own horn. It's only doing it to try and help others because I didn't have that. And things that I've learned along the way that can really help you guys as you want to continue to grow. And I'm going to say it now and I'll say it again during the thing. Anybody on this group that ever needs any kind of advice, because I've probably made the mistake already, I'm more than willing to help. So there's no cost for that. There's a few guys in here that reach out often, more than willing to help. I just want this industry to be as professional as possible. So when we talk about efficiency, one of the first things you want to say is, what is efficiency? So if you look up a definition, it says achieving your maximum productivity with minimum wasted effort or expense. So that's two things, the effort part of it and the expense part of it. So you can calculate your efficiency through your profit and loss statement. And the best way to do that is take a look at your net profit each and every year and see if you're doing the same dollar or revenue amount, if your net profit is better. And if it's better, you're becoming more efficient. I don't think there's any of us that are ever going to be at total 100% maximum efficiency. There's too many things that can go wrong. So many things that are out of your control, whether it's a hurricane, traffic jam, an accident, you can't get to your job on time, parts being mixed or backordered, supply chain issues. You know, if you want to calculate 100% efficiency, that's like every single day, everything that you plan goes in perfectly without any hitches. And that's just not the real world. The real world isn't that way. But the things that we've learned along the way to help you make yourself more efficient is what I wanted to talk about tonight. So I can't make your business 100% efficient, but I can help you with some ideas as you want to grow. Now, I know that this is a varying group. There's guys that have 3 installers, there's people that work alone, and there's other ones that have 10 or 20 installers. So this is meant for everybody. And the other thing is, anywhere along the line, if you have a question before I go on to another topic, feel free to cut in. I don't want to hog this. Matter of fact, I don't want to go more than a half hour or so. Give us time to chit-chat and talk about anything that comes to mind. So if you have any notes that you want to put aside and ask, feel free to jot them down and we can talk about it. One of the things that's most important is preventing your waste, you know, preventing waste and doing things inefficiently. And that goes from storing your product when you get it from your vendor so it doesn't get chipped. How do you put it in a rack? Because you crack the glass, you scratch it, you damage it somehow, you're not efficient anymore. You have to reorder it and you're wasting time. The biggest thing that I've learned as I started from scratch, I should have been documenting my systems. You need to have a system so that you stay and grow your business within your system. Now, that means everything from answering the phone call, how do you answer it and document it from the very first lead that comes in? Are you finding out what's the source of the lead? What made that person pick up the phone to call you? Was it an ad that you ran? Was it a word of mouth? Was it an existing customer or a repeat customer? Because that's going to help you as you get into your marketing and grow your business for more jobs. But you have to document everything. How do you measure jobs? How do you schedule your measurements? Are you doing it logistically so you're not running from one end of the zip code to the other end of the zip code to the next county, wasting time? Try and be efficiently. Are you able to call somebody that you've already scheduled and see if you can do it earlier or after so that you can pick up an appointment on the way to them and be efficient that way? People are pretty flexible. You'd be surprised. And for many years, I just didn't want to jinx it. I figure if I had an appointment, I better stick to that appointment. But I'm finding out that sometimes you call and it's better for them. And you can get 3 or 4 appointments instead of just 2. Now you're really making use of your time wisely. Same thing goes when you do your installations. Are you looking at the location of it and the time of it? I'll give you a good example. We were scheduling jobs out on Fort Myers Beach in the afternoon during spring break. Big, big mistake. It was taking us an hour in traffic just to get to the job. We knew that anything on Fort Myers Beach, we had to schedule first job in the morning and get there before the big beach rush. So you probably have the same thing in your locale. When is the high traffic on certain roads? Do you have back roads? Do your installers use their phone for GPS? You use the app called Waze so you can see if there's a accident or any kind of a bypass that you may need to use. Yeah. You call the customer when you're en route because maybe they got stuck in that traffic also and they can't make it there. So that's using technology to your advantage. You know, I remember when we started, we made an appointment for 9 o'clock and we better be there for 9 o'clock and we weren't making phone calls. But again, when I started, we didn't even have cell phones. So big, big difference. But these are things that you can really, really become efficient at. So you got to have a system and document everything from the time you get the order, who's putting it into your QuickBooks or your order entry. Are you doing that right away? Are you pulling hardware for that job so you have it, even though your scheduled install date is 2 weeks out? Or do you wait until 3 days before and look for your hardware and go, oh my God, I got to order it. And then that's going to delay everything. I know for the longest time I was running so lean, I didn't want to tie money up in inventory. But having inventory is one of the best things I ever had. Now, you didn't have to go overboard, but I used to keep between a half a dozen and a dozen of your typical items always in stock. I kept multiple cases of caulking. We used paper towels, razor blades, all your supplies. I would have multiples of that, so I was not having to run Home Depot or the Ace Hardware and pick up things as I needed them. Those are other things that help your efficiency, buying in bulk. There were times that you can buy 10 cases of caulking and get a better deal than buy one case of caulking, and you're paying shipping one time instead of 10 individual times. What you don't realize is the amount of time you waste creating a purchase order, sending in orders, waiting for confirmations, and checking things in. All of those things take time. And if you can streamline that process, you'll be better off. When you place your glass orders, is somebody staying on top of it and getting confirmations that, first of all, they received your order? We used to send it via fax, and we would get a fax confirmation, but nobody ever followed up to make sure that the order was going and what time it was coming in. And we waited, 2 weeks. We got our truck delivery and the glass wasn't there. Come to find out, we had to start all over from scratch. All we had was the acknowledgement that the fax went through. We didn't know if somebody lost the order, placed the order. The person that was receiving it got fired on the other end. You just don't know what happens. So you got to have that system to follow up on. Quoting jobs, things nowadays are a lot better than they used to be. Brandon worked really hard on that follow-up app, which is great. It almost does it automatically. But for guys that are old school like us, who follows up with those quotes that you do, that we call penders, that they haven't decided to place the order yet? Because that's money that's sitting in your pipeline that you have to generate into sales. But if you're out running around trying to chase new orders without following up ones that you've already spent a couple of hours on measuring and talking about, just because you didn't call a guy and get that order, you're wasting money. So those are other things that I was looking at. Do you have a system for receiving down payments, whether it's credit card, check, calculating it? Are you doing your own bookkeeping, or are you more efficient hiring a bookkeeper to do that for you? Now, again, nowadays, QuickBooks makes it pretty easy. There's a lot of apps there that you can receive payment right at time of the order. But do you do that? One of the biggest tricks that I found was when we do a quote at a customer's home, we give them the price before we leave and try and get the order before we leave, not go back to the shop, sit down, type out a proposal, email it to them, and wait 3 days to follow up. We're trying to go there, measure, and when it's fresh in your mind, give them a price and hopefully leave there with a deposit. And then have a system set up so that that glass order is generated within 24 hours so that it's already in the system. That I found was a high efficient deficiency on our part when we first started. I was doing it the traditional way. I was doing all the measurements, then going back, and something came up, so I didn't get the estimate out that night. I got it to the next day. Once you delay it, you get in a habit of doing it, it's too easy to push it off. Try and close the deal right at the house. So if that means taking a day and listing all your typical jobs and making a preset price list for yourself, it's well worth the time. You'll find that you'll get jobs much more rapidly, and you're going to be much more efficient. The thing about staging jobs, once you get the job and it's in the order process, are you staging the glass when it comes in so it's prepared for installation on a certain day? How are you staging it? Are you putting it on an L book and you're all stacked one behind the other? Or have you made a slotted rack or a harp rack or something to put the glass in and labeling the edges, putting a color code on them by date? So Monday's yellow, Tuesday's blue, Wednesday's orange. You can do it that way. You can assign job numbers to it. You can put them in numerically into slots. There's a whole bunch of ways of doing it. One of the mistakes we did was naming it by customer name worked out really good until you had three Johnsons or five Smiths and you're pulling the wrong job for the wrong customer. Mm-hmm. So we started doing job orders, sales order numbers. And then we put the numbers in slots numerically wherever possible. I had sent what I think is very, very efficient, a video to Chris of these racks that we use. We talked about it about a month ago. And we use them because the day before the installation, my shop guy pulls the jobs for the next day's installation. And we have these A-framed racks on casters. We buy them from Groves. And Chris, if you want to play that short video of what it looks like, it's really efficient because the guy in the shop pulls the glass, stages them on those carts with the associated hardware, metal channeling, or whatever they need. And then when they come in the next morning, each cart is assigned to a truck. So the installer just grabs his cart, rolls to his truck, and off they go. And it stops them searching through racks, looking for things, taking items that we want to keep track of. We want to pull that inventory so we know when we have to reorder it. I don't want them helping themselves to it. Now we have no idea what's left. And to me, that was a major, major improvement by doing that. Go ahead and play that.
So Chris, I was telling everybody about the A-frames. And this is it here. We staged the glass the day before. So when the installers come in, they just grab their rack and go. So I'll shoot you a video of them rolling them out to their trucks right now in the morning. They come in, they'll retrieve their cart, just roll it right out to their trucks and get it loaded.
That's quite an operation you got there, Bill.
Yeah, that goes on a daily basis. So we've got 13 trucks going out every morning just from Naples, Fort Myers alone. Those carts are amazing.
So this is pretty much the procedure in the morning. So we've already staged the hardware. Any particular channel, in this case, is the bars for the MyGlide system and their glass. So it's all strapped up, roll it out to the truck, and then from there, he'll get the loaded in his truck. We put cardboard dividers between the panels of glass to keep it from scratching and chipping in transit.
Now, right at the end of that video, you can see a little cart inside that truck, and that's the one we use for high-rise jobs, where we have to take the glass out, stage it on a smaller cart, and roll it to the particular unit numbers that's under construction. On the average home, we don't use those carts. We use Chris's skate system for big panels, or we hand carry the glass. But that skate system is very efficient. It breaks down, it's easy to store in the truck. And a lot of the other items that Chris invents are very efficient time-wise, so that one installer can have a fixed panel held in place with some of his gadgets. Ordering of parts is another deficiency that we had. I told you about glass and waiting for confirmations back, but same thing with specialty hardware. You've got to make sure that either you or you have somebody that is checking the confirmation of those orders and making sure that they're going to be received in plenty of time for you to do your installation. Last thing you want to do is go out on a job that has to get done with the improper hardware, do the installation, and then when the proper hardware comes in, let's say it's the finish, have to go take that out, swap the hardware, and reinstall it. You've just really lost your efficiency there. You've actually lost money. Mm-hmm. However, you are getting a job done and helping a builder out of a jam. But if somebody can stay on top of that and make sure you order things, or know when it's going to be in, you can save an awful lot of aggravation by letting the customer know that it's been delayed before you have to mess up your schedule.
Or like you say, you know, just having those extra parts, you know, so if you do end up with the wrong finish, you've got parts in the right finish.
Yes. The other thing we had a problem with was, you can see we have a lot of trucks. Maintaining the trucks, making sure oil changes, brakes are done, tires are rotated, Last thing you need to do is have a big installation and the truck breaks down or overheats because nobody took care of it. So our head of installers is responsible for the trucks. He keeps a log of the mileage when the oil changes were done. He does an inspection of the inventory within the trucks. One of the techniques we use is make sure that every single truck is identical inside. So in the event you have to use somebody else's truck, everything is stored in the exact same place. I learned that when I hired firefighters that were driving ambulances, and it was the protocol there. You go out on an ambulance call and you're looking for gauzes, you better be in the same drawer or you'll be wasting time. And we all know one of the biggest factors on your P&L is your labor. And if you're wasting time, you're sending an installer out to look for a 1-inch by number 8 screw, and he's looking through every door, every drawer in the bins looking for it, you're just wasting time. So I had every single truck identical and every drawer marked with a chart inside. So even a novice would be able to know where a number 8 3/4 screw is located. And it's from that, from caulking, tape, you name it. Calling our installers, calling the customers when they're en route to the house is important. But before that, when the salesman makes a sale, does he write down, hold on, I don't know if I lost you guys.
No, you're here. We're good.
I had a pop-up come up. Now I got to try and get back to you. I'm there, but I don't know where it went. Oh, there you are. Okay. We do confirmation calls 2 days before our installations are scheduled. Make sure that somebody didn't forget they had a doctor appointment or a golf tee time. Also, if they were paving the street, we can't get down it. On new construction, make sure all the tile is completed, thresholds done. The painters are not in the house, you know, plasticking off the bathroom with spray paint. We can't get in there. So you do those confirmation calls because worst thing to do is send a crew out and the builder says, oh, I'm sorry, I forgot to call you. You can't get in today and you've just wasted a whole day. That's bad. So we call 2 days out, and the morning of install, the installers call while they're on the way to the job site. If it's new construction, we're calling that foreman. We've made sure that our sales associate has all the phone numbers on his sheet, and now they all are connected through the iPad, so they can get all the information right off of their iPad that they're taking with them every day. One of the biggest tricks that we find, when you see multiple trucks here, we had a problem when the guys leave in the morning, it's like they'd go down the street and they would all pull into the gas station. They'd go in and get their coffee and their donuts, and it'd be another 45 minutes before they left. And we were wasting an hour every day with 10 trucks. And that's, they work in sets of 2. So I had 20 guys just wasting. So now we do it different. They're to fill up their trucks that when they finish the job at the end of the day. So it's always full for them in the morning. We use 3/4 of a tank. It's the thing. If you still got 3/4 of a tank, don't fill up. Just come on back at the end of the day. But they are to pick up their lunch or coffees before they come into work. That's on their time. They should have done their shopping or brought their sandwiches in or something. That's not for us to supply them time to do that. But I was finding it was just another meeting place. They would meet at the shop and mull around while guys were going in and picking their hardware. So once we start staging their stuff for them, it was a simple matter of coming in, getting your stuff, your paperwork's already there for you, you know where to go, your schedule's all listed, and you just confirm that you have the right number of pieces for each job. And you go straight to the job. You don't stop at a gas station, you don't stop at the convenience store. That's on you to bring it with you when you come to work. That saved us so much time and aggravation. That was a big, big deal. Eventually we started doing GPS in every vehicle. That gave us 2 things for our customer service reps. We could track every truck. So if we had a service call and they were on the way back to the shop at the end of the day, we could call them and say, hey, I know you're here. on your way back, stop here and do a sweep change or tighten a hinge that's snapping or whatever the case is. That saved a lot. The GPS is great. But when you do have a GPS, you can also put geofences around places you don't want them to be. You can also set speed limits so they're not going over 75, 80, whatever whatever you decide is good. We found that if we set it at 75 and we get an alert and they get a quick phone call and say, hey, Leadfoot, slow it down. We don't want our insurance rates going up. The biggest thing is to let them know that if the company's more efficient, they're going to get paid more eventually or share in a profit sharing at the end of the year. They're wasting money by getting speeding tickets, doing stupid stuff. So by putting GPSs in a truck, we can track it. You can set up geofences. Like I said, gas stations, convenience stores in your area that they know they would go to, it would just give you an alert. You also know when the truck is moving and how long it's been parked for, so you can track how long each installation is taking you. You know your start time and your stop time. So now we can get into other things. Again, I didn't want to hog. I'm coming up around 9 o'clock. We can
You're doing great, Bill. I mean, I don't think, I think everybody's just riveted. So keep going.
Again, anybody got questions? You can either throw it in the chat or just go ahead and cut in.
Yeah, I just blurted out. You know, it's okay. He's not going to be offended if you
Bill,
just.
Bill, I have a question. Yeah. So these are outstanding tips and much appreciated.
Yeah.
One of the things that even if you check off all those boxes and do all those things, it comes down to labor and your technicians installing at the site. And so how did you go about establishing what maybe a minimum amount of showers would be that you want them to do? I see some of these crazy statements online, and I'm not judging anybody, but you know, one guy did 5 doors all by himself and blah, blah, blah. But in reality, how did, and I guess this is a group question too, how did you establish that maybe a break even or where you really maximize profitability? Is it 2 showers? Is it 3?
In the most case, and again, it depends, right? I could say 2 showers, but if they're both sliders, big difference from, you know, panel door panel or neo angles, big difference. However, we know on an average, sending out, you know, 12, 13 guys a day, that each of them are going to do a minimum of 2, if not 3. Now, that's going to depend on length of time driving, whether it's a high rise and you have to go up and down stairs because they don't allow chop saws up in the units. You got to go make your cuts down in the garage. You got to sweep up after. You have to wait for the elevator. There's an awful lot of things. So we've developed a matrix for standard jobs. So let's say you start off with a slider. We'll always give you an hour to do a slider. Even with 2 people, we give you an hour. But if you're in a high rise, we're going to give you another 20 minutes to a half hour just because you got to park offsite. It's a little bit longer. If there's a removal involved, we're going to tack an hour on, but we charge the customer for that removal, right? So we're going to tack time on for the matrix. And then we just track the matrix and we have one set up for every style door that we do. And then when we get into customs, we'll go 5-piece custom, 6-piece custom, 7-piece custom, and just add them on either 15 or 30 minute increments from that time. And then, so we know the profitability just by tracking it. Where you start losing it is incompletes, callbacks, scratches, chips. So we try and do everything in our power to reduce that. And it's train, keep protective stuff on the edge of the glass, use wooden shims where possible. So it's a lot of that, Mike. I mean, it's constant. But one of the biggest key savers is this, and I'm not doing this to toot my own horn again. I started like everybody else using wall mount hinges, but when we went to pivot hinges and we reduced the number of drill holes from 4 holes per hinge to 2, you've cut your labor on installing hinges in half right off the bat. You've also decreased by 50% the amount of potential tile cracks just because you're drilling less holes. also really reducing the amount of callbacks for glass slipping out of hinges, which was our number one callback. The number one callback was the glass slipping out of a wall mount hinge, no matter how we blocked it in, whatever we did, that was our number one callback. So as we sat down with our installation team, we looked at what are the things that we need to focus on? What are the biggest callbacks? The second one was obviously leakage, but then we had to identify, what do we mean by leakage? Was it bad tile? Was it that they had 10 shower heads spraying right at the door? So we really wanted to identify what the leakage problem would be. In most cases, the threshold was pitched the wrong way, in most cases. And then we went back and said, well, we should have picked that up at the source. The sales guy should have noted that, made the contractor aware if it's new construction to fix it, or the homeowner after the fact that we have a threshold that we can put on. It will not solve your problem because the water will then puddle against that threshold, but it will stop it from going outside. The better route is to either replace your threshold or add a piece of threshold on top of the existing one and put the proper pitch on it. Those were the two major callbacks. And like anything else, if you focus on a problem, you can fix that problem. So once we got rid, you know, and we used the 80-20 rule, right? So what 20% of the problem causes 80% of the callbacks.
Right.
And we found that that's what it was. It was amazing. And
there are a couple of questions in the chat room I want to read to you.
Good.
The first one was just asked, what activities do you delegate to make yourself more efficient? And what type of activities do you not delegate because you have to do them?
Right now at the stage I'm in, I delegate everything. I don't have to do anything right now. But it took forever. I mean,
we have to do this, right? Come on, Shower Door Pros, and talk.
That's a must, and it's fun. That's not even work.
Yeah,
that's not work. But that's the other thing. If you're going to grow your business, you have to learn to delegate and trust in people. You just have to manage them, though. You can't just put them out there without watching what they're doing because your name's attached to it. You have to manage it. But you're going to get a comfort level there, and they're going to do a good job for you. And they realize that you have confidence in them. So I delegate as much as I can. Now, in the very beginning, I think it's Elabon that asked that. In the very beginning, I was doing all the sales. I mean, we're talking the very beginning, before Keith and Doug were even involved in the business. I was doing all the sales. I started off doing installations, and that wore where I couldn't do it anymore. That's why I feel bad for Brian. Brian's doing everything. And you've got to start getting some other installers so you can go out and network and bring in more sales. Mm-hmm. And that's how you grow. But right now I delegate everything. I just manage, and we have meetings on it to make sure everything's going the way I like it to be. And some of it doesn't go the way I like it. And it actually is better than the way I liked it. They have good decisions.
Awesome. I want to be like you when I grow up, Bill.
Yeah, right. It took a long time. Let me tell you.
Here's another one. I think Christina asked this one. If you have a callback, do you always send the same crew? If so, do you have like territories?
Christina, that is a great question. We used to send the same crew. I found out that I wasn't getting truthful answers of what the true problem was because they were covering for themselves. So I like sending a different crew, have a different set of eyes on it and analyze it. But you have to have a culture where they know that you're not going to ream them out. You have to have trust, what we call no blame. We don't want to blame anybody. They have a problem. So let's analyze it and fix it, and we'll all learn from it. So I'm not trying to throw anybody under the bus, but if we can find that we were doing something wrong or that crew did something wrong, we're not going to, you know, put them up in front of everybody. We're going to pull them aside and explain, hey, this is what we found, and try and take as much video or snapshots than you can to document it. Mm-hmm. Some kind of guys were not, you know, our channeling has a caulking trough underneath it. So we're not running exposed beads of caulk. Some guys weren't putting enough caulking in that caulking, there was voids, or the tile was too irregular. And even though you put your normal amount of caulking in there, because the tile was irregular at different heights, some of it would fall down into the void and not stick up into the bottom of the channeling. So those are the common things. And then, of course, at your 90 degree horizontal and vertical butt joint there, that's another source of leaks, or what used to be. But we haven't had that in a long time because of the in-house training we have. Mm-hmm. We go through that training all the time because those are the common callbacks. Mm-hmm. So, Christina, the short answer is now we do not send the same crew. Even if it's more convenient, we do not send the same crew, but we used to.
Bill, to kind of piggyback Michael's question, kind of like when you guys first started out, because what I think what we're struggling with over, you know, in my neck of the woods, is we've got a pretty small crew, and I'm pretty much doing everything as far as, you know, doing the quotes, doing estimates, setting appointments, all that stuff. My wife, yeah, she kind of handles more of, you know, the initial first call and setting that part up. And then, yeah, I have a crew of three guys now, which we just lost one. And it's, we're trying to find the balance or find that transition point of, you know, having a guy go out and do estimates for me, or kind of like delegate some of that stuff. When did you see that transition, or how did you kind of transition into doing more delegating? And did you, like, you know, have one of your installers go out? Cause that's kind of what we were doing. And then I had this guy all set up, and then he ends up leaving and going to another company, which, you know, it is, that always happens, but that's kind of where we're kind of teetering on, you know, the growth part, I guess.
I went through that exact same problem. And I think we all have. You're always afraid of training guys to become your competition, right? They learn so much. They get friendly with the builders, and all of a sudden they leave your company, and the builder that had given you work for years is now giving it to the guy that he's familiar with that's been installing most of his jobs. But we had to come up with not only the culture of the company, but bring their pay up so that it's stupid for them to leave and go against you. We want to make sure that they're paid good, they feel appreciated, and they're compensated for it. Now, when it gets into sales, it didn't take long for me to realize that I needed to get an on-the-road salesperson, because, again, I was doing it the old-fashioned way. I was doing all the measurements, going back, then sitting in the office and sending out proposals. So once we can do more and more appointments is when I brought on the next person. And then I had them shadow me for a while. I would go with them and then start doing the easy ones. If we could start qualifying it over the phone that it was a slider or it's just a door and panel, everything in line, I felt comfortable with. When it started to get into angles or a steam shower, I would still do it. As that person got more and more training, then they were able to do that. It took many years to get to that point. It did. But it's like a snowball. You get it rolling down the hill and it starts picking up momentum. Then you need another set of installers. Then you need this and that. It feels like you take a step forward and two steps backward, but eventually that wheel catches up and now you're rolling. And then you have a system. So I talked about systems. That was a big deal right there, having a system for that salesman to be able to follow. Mm-hmm. Did that answer your question?
Yeah. I think that's the biggest thing. One thing you mentioned that kind of the biggest takeaway for us is when I was sending the guy out, it was determining, you know, whether it's something that he can handle by himself, you know, to measure, or if I was going to have to go make a second trip and get a, you know, another set of eyes on it. And then, you know, it was more of he was having to travel to, you know, 30 minutes, 45 minutes just to get to work. So it was more of like a location thing for him, but that's just been kind of our biggest struggle is finding that fine line of when to hire, and, you know, and it is a big trust deal too, because, you know, we really pride ourselves on, you know, not making mistakes and not making the extra trips or, you know, what have you. So, but yeah, no, and the short answer, yeah, that answered.
One of the other things that really helped us out, and it wasn't the reason that we started making our own glass, but it really was a byproduct of it, is guys that wanted to go into business for themselves, it was easy for them to leave and go if they could use the same glass supplier that we were using.
Mm.
When I was buying from Coral, they would make that connection and then they would buy from Coral, and Coral used to set up anybody. But now we start making our own glass and we brought in our own hardware. Not so easy for them. They leave and they're going to have to try and make all these new contacts. That's very difficult.
Or just buy it from you.
Yeah, but not if he's competing. Right?
not if you won't sell it to him, right?
If the guy wants to move to California or Phoenix or whatever, that's a different story.
Right.
Not if he's going, you know, 20 minutes up the street. No, I don't think so. I'll help everybody as long as they don't bite the hand that feeds them, right?
There you go.
Because I've got 185 family members that we have to take care of. I've got to take care of that company first.
Got to play nice.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. If I help them get there, and that's great. And if they have a trade and they want to move on, I support that, but not to compete against us.
Right.
You can go somewhere else, can move. I'll help you. You want to move to another market, that's great, but don't just open up in our backyard and start to go right after the same customers that we've been doing. To me, that's a no-no.
Exactly. Hey, did you see Dana's question there in the chat room, Bill?
I did. So I'm assuming he's talking about on beach entries are the slope floors, so it's a step-in shower. So I would imagine that's what he's talking about. Dana, I know you're on here, so go ahead and verbalize if I'm interpreting it right.
Well, the transition from the bathroom floor to the inside pan, on these things are usually right at the edge of where the side tile is.
Yep.
So even with offset hinges, a lot of times you got to get that, or offset pivots, whatever, you've got to get that bottom pivot in, and it's on the slope towards the drain.
Yeah. Which is good, and a lot of the pivots allow for that, or you can just put a little shim underneath the inside of that, you know, to make it somewhat level, just to compensate for that slope.
Mm-hmm.
Usually not a severe slope, just a minor slope, right? Mm-hmm. So you can put a shim on the inside of that pivot hinge just to build it up a smidge.
If you need to.
We have a lot of those, Dana, a lot of them.
Same thing for the sliders, the bottom guide.
Yes, exactly right. Exactly right.
I have one question, Bill.
Yeah.
Just curious, actually. I bet you guys have like a lot of measurements rolling along the days. Do you have like, is it just your salesperson who does the measurements, or also the installers?
No, the installers aren't doing any measurements. I mean, they're double checking measurements when they go to their installation to make sure it's laid out right. But mm-hmm. as far as sales and measuring, no, those are salesmen only, not installers. Now, a lot of the salesmen were installers previously, and they have good knowledge and a good awareness of the bathroom and the layout to make sure that whatever the customer picks out is functional for that bathroom, right? Like maybe only a slider is the appropriate thing, as even though they want a swinging door, it just may not be practical. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's good that we try and elevate guys that have been there to stay in the business. Mm-hmm. I find that that's one of the most efficiencies than starting from scratch and a newbie and trying to teach him. All of the old mistakes seem to come back. It's really important to try and keep your workforce together, guys that are trained and dependable and knowledgeable. It's really important because you start hiring new people, all the old mistakes that everybody makes comes right back again. That hurts your reputation.
All right, cool.
Hey, Bill, I got a question for you.
Yeah.
I know I've gone back and forth. I've listened to you talk about it before, and a lot of people, everybody kind of has a different take on it, and I like the way you guys do it with, you try to get the sale, try to get them the price and get the sale in the house. I get it. It takes a lot of logistics to make it happen, but it's obviously doable. How much, I guess the question is, how much pressure do you put on the customer? Because it's always, I'm going to talk to my wife, I'm going to talk to my husband, my mother-in-law is coming over. There's always You know what I mean? Like, so how much like pressure do you put on them to try to close that sale as opposed to just being like, all right, call me later?
Zero. So, no pressure.
So a lot of them just volunteer. So a lot of them are just like, 1900 sounds good. Where do I sign? Like, where do I, how do I leave the deposit?
Yeah, don't forget the initial phone call, the setup even before the appointment happens, or they came into the showroom. A lot of these people have already been somewhat qualified and they have a range. So you're not really surprising them.
Yeah, we do it too. We try to send, we get pitches. Everybody has a phone now. We get pitches. We send them, we get them in the ballpark before we don't want to get there and be like, oh, I didn't realize it was going to be that much.
That's right.
So we try to do the same thing. We try to qualify it. But I guess that was kind of my question. Like if they're ready to go and they're a legitimate customer, because I do get some people just be like, all right, they told me it was going to be this much. When can we go? And I love when that happens. But I guess it's just, so I guess the question is just ask for the sale at the time.
Does it sound good? Is it something you want to get started with? You want me to place that order? That's all. It's a simple question. You can ask for the order without being pushy.
Yeah. Because I've heard it, because there's companies in my area that I've gotten calls about. And they're like, we were going to go with them, but the salesman was here. And it's just like, it's almost like a Anderson guy was there trying to sell you siding, and like the guy won't leave until you sign. So I never wanted to be that guy, but I always hear about like trying to get the sale. So I was always trying to figure out
Mike, the point is, you're already at the house. You already have the communication with the customer. They see you face to face. Honestly, it's more difficult for them to say no face to face than it is over the phone. So if you're there and you say, hey, does this sound, is it within where you expected it to be? Did I answer your questions? Yeah, you're going to get the order most of the time, as opposed to the guys that go there and say, okay, I'll get you back a quote in a day or two. I guess that's where I was going with it, is why put it off a day or two when you're right there? You're so much more efficient. You can get the money. Most of the time, they're going to give you a check instead of a credit card. So you've just saved the fees as well.
Yeah, it's just about training on my end now, because for the guy that's out there measuring, it's just, all right, we'll go through everything, go through the measurements, and then this is going to be the new routine.
Yeah.
I'm going to give it a shot.
Yeah. If you have the prices preset on an iPad or a laptop, they're opening it up. They're seeing that you already have a price list. So they're not getting gouged. They know that it's a preset price. It's not right. Like when you walked up their driveway and you saw that there was a Porsche and a Lamborghini that all of a sudden, it's a different price for them. They're looking at a price that their neighbor would have gotten, and they feel comfortable with that. So,
Bill, are you taking Venmo, Zelle, and that sort of thing as well?
We haven't yet. We probably will, though, Brad, because so many people are starting to use it. I'm not taking any crypto at this point. Just because I'm not comfortable with it yet. But the Venmo brings a different problem for accounting. We've gotten to the point where unless the person in bookkeeping knows that that money came from that customer for that invoice, it just causes a problem. All of a sudden this money shows up in your account and they go, hey, what invoice is this for? We're running 10 stores. We don't even know what city it's coming from.
Yeah, what I did, of course, now they have business Venmo accounts and that sort of thing. But before that, it was free. I mean, it didn't cost anything. I just set up a separate Venmo account that I'd write a check out of that one account specifically for that one sale and record it in the program. But it is, that's what I like about the credit card thing. And, unfortunately you have to pay for that, but it's more efficient to let the system go through the process and do all that. So
you're paying somebody else for the process, right? It's a processing fee. But I use Truist and they use Zelle. That's their choice. So we use it for other things, but not for a customer. Not yet, anyhow.
Yeah, Zelle don't charge you anything, even business Zelle.
Yeah, that's pretty good. It's really good.
That is good.
Okay. Hey, Bill.
Yeah.
Sorry to interrupt everything, but just out of curiosity, if you're selling stuff on site and somebody wants to add a towel bar, for example, and maybe they want to add a brushed bronze towel bar, that's a different price point than a brush nickel or a chrome towel bar. How do you handle that in the field with your price list?
Yeah, so we've got the price list and then we have all the options on the side. They want to go up from 3/8 to 1/2 inch. Okay, it's $200 more. They want Easy Care Shield on it. Okay, you add that. They want low iron glass. They take the square footage. So we just show whatever the upcharge is, knowing that your door already has the basic. So we figured out what is the basic. Well, it's chrome and brushed nickel. To us, whether you pick chrome or brushed nickel, same price. You want to go oil rub bronze, you're going to add 100, 150, whatever the configuration of the door is. So if you're out there and they want to add a towel bar through the glass, it's going to be an upcharge of, let's say it's 150 or 200, because now you've got to put holes in the glass and you have to order that towel bar. So yeah, we have optional on the side. We go through it. Extra height, extra width. Is the panel so big I need an extra crew or an oversized truck to get the panel of glass there? So yeah, we have this whole matrix set up. But it's the same thing, Christina. You're going out to a job and they want to add it. You go, oh, you want a towel bar? Sure. Towel bar is $150, but it's in a specialty finish now. Now, the thing is, you have to know the inventory that you can get it and get it done on a certain time. Before you take the order, you say, I just want you to know that brushed brass or champagne gold is not easy to come by. It may delay your order. I just want you to know that up front. Mm-hmm. But you can still have that matrix in your pricing. Mm-hmm. And Christina, if you send me an email, I can send you like a sample pricing, how we've done it. And you can use that. Yeah, and Corey's got it on the iPad. It's really easy. There's a line drawing of every configuration. So you start with sliders, base price. You want extra height, it's this much more. You want oil rub bronze or matte black, it's that much more. You want a towel bar handle combination. You want just handles and not towel bars. You want a knob. It's all broken down.
That's great. And do you like write a contract on site with the customer though? Or is that something that's already preset on the iPad? Or how does the contracting work with the customer?
Okay, so we have what we call a takeoff sheet. It's a 2-page NCR form, no carbon required, right? So we're filling it all out and have a price list on the side and we're ripping it off, giving them the other half. They want it, they sign it, give us a deposit. We fill that out and they have their receipt when we leave. Now we take that, send it into our order entry people, and they're starting to put in the order for that. Every part, you know, the header, the bottom set, the side jams, 2 towel bars, 2 panels of glass. And that's how they break it down and we can do our cost analysis.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Bill.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Hey, Bill, there's one more question in the chat. It's a little bit complex. It's like, what are the top 3 to 5 things you did to market, develop, and grow your business to eliminate reliance on track builders, it says. 1 minute. Go ahead and answer that question.
That is a great thing. So number one thing, we did a lot of home shows, lots of home shows, because now that's direct to consumer, not through the builder. That was probably the top thing we did. Number two, advertise. Number three, advertise again. You know, back when I started, it was Yellow Pages, right? But so those are gone now. Mm-hmm. But social media, I mean, look at what Keith has done with social media. And we're doing the same thing with shower doors, just awareness. And it doesn't have to be buy our shower door today. It's like, hey, take a look at this. This is what we can do. We can turn this into this in one day. You know, we don't have to rip out your whole thing. And so I market directly to them. And then the other thing is, the best customers you can get are word to mouth. So if you make sure that you make your customers happy, mm-hmm. they're going to tell their friends. Mm-hmm. I tell everybody this, you do a good job for a builder, he's probably not going to tell another builder about you because he wants to keep you as his sub. You do a good job for a homeowner, they're going to tell everybody they go to dinner with. Mm-hmm. This company treated me right. They cleaned up. My bathroom was cleaner when they left than when they started. You know, this is the company. I went into their showroom. These guys knew their stuff. They showed up when they were supposed to. They called me. That goes a long ways because you got to realize who you're competing against. Yeah. And I don't know if people are still getting 3 quotes. I don't even know if that's a thing anymore. I'm getting 2 more quotes. I think people's time is so, valuable. They don't want
that's to. That's the value of quoting on site. They will let you know if they're trying to get more quotes.
Yes. Yes. So
that's another benefit of quoting on site. And then you can maybe do something about it.
How many times have you gotten a quote on site and you've seen somebody's already been there because they've left their pencil marks? Or
Yeah.
They left the tape down. Or
that's true. You know,
Evidence. Sharpie.
The guy used a Sharpie and didn't erase it. And it's just going into the marble. It's like, who does that?
Into the grout line.
Yeah. Are you still doing the home shows, and how effective are they?
They're very effective. They're very effective. People still like to feel and touch things. The more people buy things out of Amazon, they realize when it shows up at their door, it's not what they expected. Mm-hmm. It's cheap. It's flimsy. It's metric. I don't know what the heck they do, but with shower doors, I think it's very important. They just want to touch and feel, see how solid it is. And talk to the people. I think they want to have a comfort level with the company that they're dealing with.
Yeah, one thing that worked really good for us too, and I actually kind of snagged it from Brandon, is he implemented a deal with his installers as far as when they leave the customer, they leave one of our business cards and have them leave a review, you know, on Yelp or Google. And I actually spiff the guys at the end of the month. So for every, you know, Google or Yelp ad, I'll give the guys $10 each for each review. And then I just tally it up at the end of the month and then they get their little spiff. And that's worked out actually really well for us.
Yeah, we do the same thing there. We use a third party site called Podium and we send out a link on every job. It goes right to their phone. They just click on it and they can write their review. So we'll know how many review invites were sent out by what teams and then how many actual Podium reviews. You know, we just hit over 3,600 five-star reviews.
Wow. Congratulations.
It's all people thinking they're bots. But, you know, if the guys stay on it, and again, if you focus them and compensate for them, and you know what that does to your SEO rankings?
Oh, yeah.
It just makes you so much more relevant. And, you know, that just helped our SEO guy just absolutely loves it because it makes his job look like he's doing a super job. And he is.
Hey, Bill, I got a question on that with Podium. So are your lead installers sending that link to the customer when they're finished with the job?
Yes.
So they do they have company cell phones or are they just doing it off their iPad?
They do it off the iPad they have, or they're almost everybody has unlimited text and data now, so it doesn't even cost them anything.
Yeah.
So it's not a problem. And they'll even ask the customer, hey, do you need me to set up a Gmail account for you if you want? Because a lot of it goes through Gmail. And there's people that just don't have Gmail accounts. But we can take it now on Facebook and LinkedIn. So it's pretty good. And the installers do get bonuses for that at the end of the month. We've got a whole schedule. I'm sorry?
I said, I think that's great. Motivation for them and positive reviews for the company. It's a win-win.
Yeah. I mean, there are so many options. One of the things that I have to do now, you were asking me about delegating stuff. Hardest thing for me to do now is finding opportunities for our guys to continue to grow. You know, I was an installer for many years, and I mean, I was getting my hourly wage and that was it. So now we're bonusing them for a number of things, length of service, not missing. You go a full month without a call out, they'll get a bonus. If you get Podium reviews, they get a bonus. If they sell the coating on the glass, they go to the house and they say, I know this new door has got this easy care coating. How about your other door? You know, you want to sign that and they can sell it at the house and actually make a commission on it. And they don't have to force them. Just say, hey, it's available. I'm here. If you'd like me to do it, I can do it. So I keep giving them opportunities to make more money and they become salesmen. They really do.
You mentioned that you have a head of installers.
Yes.
Is he actually also an installer and goes out or is he in-house the whole time?
No, he goes out and he oversees the guys. We we have our installers on level-based systems, level 1, 2, 3, and 4, and they have to perform certain tasks to move up a level. But that gave us the opportunity to hire guys from other companies, see how they are, so that they don't have to start off like everybody as a beginner. They, if they have a skill and they show that they can do it, and they're coming to us from another company and they can already do neo angles or steam showers, they can, we put them through a competency test in our university. And if they pass it, then they can go right to that skill level. So it allows us to attract more talent.
But you mentioned that this person also is in charge of maintaining trucks. One guy that handles the whole fleet?
Yes. Right now it is. Now, wow. the whole fleet in Naples, Fort Myers. Now, we go into Sarasota, Orlando. The store managers there handle the fleet. But Tampa's the next one. They've got 7 trucks. And then Orlando's got 2, and Sarasota's got 4. So we've got 13 overall trucks in the Naples, Fort Myers. And then those other stores have, you know, not as many trucks.
Yeah, it's a lot to keep track of them.
It is. It is. Between oil changes, brakes, tire rotation, overall maintenance, and then accidents. stones in the windshield.
Sure.
I mean, we got to the point where we got to have 2 trucks sitting around as spare trucks, just in case something happens.
Wow.
Well, we're way past your time, Chris.
Wow. Yeah, I mean, I hate to break this thing up. This is really good. Somebody said in the chat room we need to do like part 2 of that. So I know you'll be around, Bill. We'll definitely get you back on to do another one. I have a feeling you could go for another hour, no problem.
I could talk forever on this. I just hope that there's value for everybody.
Oh, man, so much. Absolutely. Yeah, so much. I mean, I think we could unpack this, you know, for like all year. You know? And yeah, you just hit tons of things. I got a lot of great takeaways, you know. Like a friend of mine always says, early to bed, early to rise, work like hell, and advertise.
I like it. I like it.
All right, everybody. Hey, have a great week. I hope to see you back here again next Wednesday. Hey, this is Chris Phillips, and I want to thank you for listening to the podcast. You may want to join the Shower Door Professionals group on Facebook. Just go to Facebook and search for Shower Door Pros, and you'll find us. I look forward to seeing you.